This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. This is Cruise Control, brought to you by Carsome this week. As usual, I'm joined on the phone lines by my friends Arif Roos. He is that man with the news. Say hello, Arif.
Hello, Richard.
And over there, somewhere else in the ether, is my other friend, because I only have two, Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, Daniel.
Hi, all the way from the ether, it's me, Daniel Fernandez. From DSF.my.
Car show this week in three parts. We've got some news coming up front. We've got some car launches a little bit later on, and then a used car review coming up later on. It's a Subaru Impreza WRX version 10 hatchback, of all things. Arif, kick us off with some news.
First things first, quite a lovely roll off the tongue intro there just now, right? Cruise Control brought to you by Carsome. Don't you just love to hear that?
Doesn't it sound nice?
It does, it does. But onto the real news. You know, last week, Daniel and I spoke about the 12th Malaysia plan and the fact that they were thinking about car scrapping based on the age for the millionth time in Malaysia. So we gave a little bit of a roundup. Daniel gave a reason why it probably will not happen in Malaysia and the difficulties, but he has now written five more reasons about why it will not happen in Malaysia.
So I will start with the most simplest thing, okay, before even I give the five reasons. Remember this, you must understand that in Malaysia, cars are already expensive. Car scrapping works in countries where cars are not expensive to start with, and also in countries where they are forced to do car scrapping to keep, you know, the quantity down, like Singapore and Hong Kong. Now, in Malaysia, think about it. Okay, I'm going to give you these five reasons. Think about it very quickly. Say in the future, a retired 60-something-year-old man, you know, and I got on Honda Civic 1996. The car is running.
How far in the future are we theoretically?
About 30 years, about 30 years. And I've got this lovely Honda Civic 1.6L, you know, twin carb. It's running perfectly. The aircon is cold. Power windows work. Central locking work. I still can get spare parts. I've been going to the same mechanic. He's also got another 30 good years of, you know, repairing cars. Why would I scrap my 25-year-old Civic to buy a new simple compact car and start paying installments? Because why? If I scrap my Civic, I'll probably get a couple of thousand ringgit, or maybe even at best 5,000 ringgit, because it's a JDM car. But if I buy a brand new compact car, at the best, I'm going to pay 30,000 and a loan. So it just doesn't make sense. Number two, if I'm a fresh grad, which I am, you know, fresh grad, you know, and my mother used to drive a Nissan Leisure, for example, you know, and it's a 2008 car. It's nothing special, but it's a great commuter car. It's spacious, it's reliable, it's reasonable to run. And she says, young man, here's the keys to my car. Enjoy. Go forth and study better, you know, whatever. So I go and start working and I start driving this Nissan Leisure, and I've just got my first few months paycheck. And the government says, oh, you got to scrap the car. Scrap the car, then what am I going to buy? The little bit of money I got, I like to go and drink coffee five times a day in a fancy place. You know, I want to meet women. I'm buying expensive clothes so that I look good. And I'm buying hair gel, you know. And the thing is, I don't have enough disposable income to get a new car.
Right.
So now let's go to number three, okay? A young paralegal, not me, because I have no legal background, with a decent salary, driving a hand-me-down daddy's car, a 19-year-old Toyota Camry. A 2002 car, running perfectly, no issue. Would I want to get a new, fresh car loan? No, because as a young paralegal, when I go to court to follow my boss, it's nice for me to arrive in a nice big Toyota, right or not? I don't want to come in a little compact car. Then you have, which is not me again, the divorced 50-something, living in some part of Klang Valley. You got an ex-wife payment to make. You got to make kids payment. You got a mortgage of a house that you're not living in because you're renting a room in a seedy part of town. Can you sell your 30-year-old Mercedes-Benz, which you've had from day one, to get a little compact car? No, again, because these are people below middle class. These are people who are living day to day. If they've got a car that's still running, or, you know, okay, it might not be perfect, but it's still a car. It gets me from A to B. I am not going to sell it to get a new car. And the scrap value is just not worth it for me to go and get a new car. Now, in an environment where we were a higher income nation, which is what the government is pushing for, then you can say, okay, we can move people to start scrapping cars and getting new cars. And then my last example, which is my best example, a family of, say, 7 or 8, okay, maybe 5 kids plus a maid or an in-law living with them or an outlaw. You know, they've got an old Proton Exora. It works. All of them can get in the car. All of them have a seat. All of them have a seat belt. They've got a rear aircon. The car is still running. The loan is fully paid for. Money is too tight to mention, especially in this economy. Would they want to trade up? No. So again, I'm saying, you know, if you want to get rid of all these people, their cars, I think the next election, you will not make it.
Strong words.
Loud and clear.
But where does this work, though? I mean, we look at countries like the UK where it works. Why does it work there, Daniel? Like, is it simply based on the cost of cars?
Cost of cars. Also, new cars are not that expensive.
Yeah.
And then also, if you're living in the UK, for example, okay, public transport is not the greatest. In Greater London, yes, it is. But outside London, it's not great. If you live in the boondogs, you know, you need a car, you need a motorcycle, you need something to get you around, you know. But still, you have people who are willing to trade up because what? You can get a really sensible car for about £5,000 to £4,000, right?
And cheaper.
Okay, so let's say £4,000. Now, someone working in Selfridges, because they don't have a store here, so I'm not plugging in. Someone working in Selfridges will earn about £2,000 to £3,000 a month.
Yeah, yeah.
On average.
Yeah, but I'd imagine so.
Okay, so if you take comparatively, can someone here earning £2,000 to £3,000 buy a new car for £4,000 to £5,000?
Absolutely not, no.
Exactly my point. The cheapest car is going to be at least £30,000, which means you got to take your salary times 12 and you still don't reach that cheapest car value, you know?
All right. Clear as a bell there. Clear as a bell. Okay. Moving along.
We do have a next story, which has to do with a lot of money. And it has to do with a company that's been doing very, very well recently. And they're called Volvo. Obviously, rolling off their highest sales ever last year and record-breaking profits for several consecutive successive years. I believe that was like something between 2013 to 2017 or something like that. Volvo are going to issue new shares with a goal to raise up to US$2.86 billion. We know somebody who has $2.86 billion, don't we? Hidden somewhere in some island.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. With some of that being made available by Geely Sweden. So Wall Street Journal, according to them, they say that Volvo might be then valued at $25 billion, which, to put into context, is a really huge contrast to what Ford sold Volvo to Geely for back in 2010, which was just $1.8 billion. So if Volvo hits the target and raises all this money, the company will have recorded an increase of $23.2 billion in just 11 years under Geely. And we do have a company under Geely, don't we? So this is quite positive stuff in that regard.
So are you saying we should all go out and buy Proton share?
They're not public yet,
are
they?
They're not, they're not. But they're under DRB.
But when they do...
They're partly owned by DRB, so maybe you should buy DRB shares?
That wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yes.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, yeah. We are not financial advisors. We are just people talking on the radio.
Not financial advice. Not financial advice.
But with up to $2.86 billion raised, the move for Volvo is to build more sustainable business and push for all of the targets, of which, you know, they have got a lot going for them at the moment. They're a very ambitious company with a lot of big targets. Especially the fact that they are going to revolutionize their entire lineup to be all electric only. They're going to go zero carbon and sustainable factories by 2040, I think it was. And then they just recently announced that they're going leather free by 2030. And they've also introduced a new logo, which doesn't look all that different, if I'm honest.
Somebody sent this to me actually last week, one of our colleagues, Adeline. She sent me a link to the quote-unquote news story of Volvo changing their logo. And I just looked at it and I'm like, that's it. There was a local car company, if you remember, that switched their logo not all that long ago.
Exactly.
And it was like, well, that looks familiar. This one is just like, they've just taken all the color out of it and the beveling. And it's just a flat logo. And everybody's going with the flat logos lately. They've taken all the colors out and just making it simple, aren't they?
I like to meet the logo designers and find out how much they got paid to do this.
It will have been a lot.
Yeah, right?
A lot.
I could have done that on Photoshop for 1,000 ringgit.
Don't say that. Say 5,000 ringgit. Come on.
Sorry, 5,000. I'm ruining the market for everybody.
The other thing, gents, I just want to put this out there. Just see if you all have any opinion on this. Volvo said they're not going to use leather anymore. Mm. Okay, so they're thinking, you know, it's not good to have leather in the cars. But their reasons for doing it, is it because they don't want to kill the cows? Because the cows are going to be killed anyway for the meat.
Mm-hmm.
So are they doing it because they want to reduce the number of cows being killed? Or is it because they're saying that, you know, leather is not good for us, you know, warm climate, this, that, all, you know? Or, you know, it's putting cost to the car. So I'm trying to figure this out because I'm not a fan of leather. I prefer cloth seats, you know, because of our weather. But I can see a lot of premium car buyers who are saying, if there's no leather, I don't want. Or they will still buy the Volvo and go to the guy who does leather upholstery and then, you know, get leather installed in the seats, and then there are going to be problems with after sales and warranty because the airbags will not deploy properly or the electric seats will not work properly, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you know?
Yeah. I think it's in line with their sustainability goals though, right?
But how is that working with sustainability? I mean, the cow is going to die anyway.
Well, yeah, but it's that thinking, isn't it? You know, if your vehicles are sustainable from top to bottom and they're not using any animal products inside, it gets within people's mentality. If you're looking at going full electric, and it's convincing people in a very clever marketing way, I think.
Okay, so now the mining that goes on in Bolivia and Peru and Africa for the lithium iron and the copper for the batteries, those are being done with no side effects.
No, I know. But this is an entire topic about greenwashing, which we shouldn't be talking about because that's an entirely different show. We could do a show on that. I mean, that would be interesting. But
okay, next week.
Maybe next week, yeah.
A lot of car companies have done this switch before. They're offered a leatherette instead of leather. True. I think Mercedes-Benz was one of the first ones. And I think it has to do with a connection with, you know, industrial farming. And we do have a lot of non-meat eaters in the office. And they talk about that a lot, you know, the industrial farming practices and how a lot of cows, they fart CO2 or whatever into the air and it pollutes the air. So, it's the whole thing. And definitely, though, it's just greenwashing, isn't it? But back to that 2.86 billion, Volvo says that they're also going to invest in battery supply plants in Europe, US and China, as well as building an in-house electric motor building facility, which is quite interesting. But everybody's kind of wondering what happened to Polestar, because Polestar is their slightly more bespoke brand. It's, you know, it's all electric, super cool. We haven't heard anything about that. Mm. But recently they have announced that they are going public as well. But this time in a different method, and here's the business part of the Business FM 89.9. It's something that I've just learned as a result of this, so the more you know. Polestar is going to go public via a special purpose acquisition company, something that apparently many EV startups like Rivian and Lucid Air, and I think to a certain extent Tesla as well, are using to build their capital and increase their value. Mm. So without going in too much into it, SPACs, or special purpose acquisition companies, are specifically formed to raise a lot of money in a fraction of the times that traditional IPOs take, such as the one that Volvo is going to do.
Yeah.
And they also provide higher valuation.
I mean, they've been around since about 1990. You know, a lot of people call them blank check companies, and they kind of go public before an acquisition target is identified, for the most part anyway. Companies can raise up to billions and billions and billions. So what they do is, let's say you want to form a SPAC, you know, then you create a company to go public, and you go on a roadshow to help find your investors with that company, the SPAC, then people will buy units in that company to raise money.
Hmm.
And then that company will go across to acquire using that secondary company, if that makes sense.
Okay, Richard, do you have the number for the people at SPAC?
SPAC is just a term, but there are quite a few of them. You can make your own SPAC up, Daniel, if you wanted to.
Oh, I see. It's not a particular company.
No. So you form your own company,
right?
And you say, I'd like to acquire a different company or help raise funds. And then you go around your friends and you say, okay, we are thinking about investing in this company. Would you like to contribute? They donate to your SPAC, and then you do it that way.
Oh, because I'm thinking about our you know, chip manufacturing plant.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's how we're going to do it, guys.
Okay, we should probably take a break then, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Let's have a little break here. When we come back, of course, we've got some car launches, quite a decent variety of stuff to launch. I know there's some excitement around a new Honda. That's all coming up, though, after the break here on Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM, brought to you by Carsom. My name is Rich Bradbury, and as usual, I'm joined on the phone lines by my friends, Arif Ruse. He's normally that man with the news. Say hello, Arif.
Hello, Richard.
And Daniel Fernandez. He's that fellow with the website, dsf.my. Say hello, Daniel.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you for still allowing me to talk on BFM.
Now, he styles his hair regularly, but he's also going to give us some stylings and some stuff all about some new car launches today. I'm talking about Daniel, of course. You were talking about your hairstyling earlier on, Daniel.
Yes.
Anyway, should we get into some launches then?
Yeah, we should. Here's a car that you should probably match with your brand of hair gel, Daniel. It's the new Civic Type R, and it's been teased. No technical details yet, but what a fantastic looking car this is.
And the thing is, they've done it with a sedan, you know, with a fastback. I think this is going to sell like hot bread.
You know, Rich, this might take my heart over a new BMW.
What?
It's that awesome. Yeah.
But, you know, be prepared for a price of sub 300,000 ringgit if it arrives. And it's going to be fully imported.
Some people are predicting, you know, it's going to be some sort of all-wheel drive, just following the trend of the hot hatches these days, possibly a hybrid powertrain. And hopefully, still, they sell one with a stick shift. And got me thinking, you know, a manual Civic Si with about 220 horsepower would be absolutely perfect for a driver's car, especially if it looks like that. But another amazing car that we've loved for the past 3 years, but have not ever gotten the sight to see, is the new Suzuki Jimny. And it's finally arrived here in Malaysia, sold by NASA Eastern, the second car that they're launching after the Swift Sport. Do you guys want to hear the price?
Go on, then.
Please.
169,000 for this bare metal car. Even if it is all cute and cuddly, it's a bit much, isn't it, guys?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's much, and the previous version was selling for just under 100,000. But remember this, new price at 169,000 has made a lot, and when I say a lot of grey importers, AP holder in Malaysia upset. You know why?
Why is that?
Because they were bringing this car in and selling for 180, 190 used. So whoever's been having stock has been forced to slash their prices. You can actually go onto the online classifieds. There were actually a few that were advertised for 190. Then you can see the little slash and then now 150, 155. Come on. New one, 169. Why would I pay 150, 155? You have to put it down to 90, you know.
Especially if it's used.
Yes. And the next thing is, a lot of people are saying, oh, this one, NASA overcharging. Okay, let me tell you this. Check the price in Japan, check the price in Australia, check the prices in all other right-hand drive countries except Singapore because they got high tax. This is an expensive vehicle. This vehicle is not cheap from the factory. And the reason why Suzuki does this is because, hey, I'm iconic, I'm stylish. If Mini can do it, why can't I?
I feel a bit weird about that. I don't know about you.
Wait, why do you feel weird? A basic Mini costs under 200,000, just under 200,000. And that's a basic Mini, bare bones also, but nobody buys it because it's too basic. So this vehicle at 169, okay, what?
Okay, just some specifications just for you. 1.5 liter naturally aspirated engine paired to a 4-speed automatic. 4-speed automatic in 2021 is reliable, yes, but it's a bit old. You got part-time four-wheel drive, low-range standard, that's pretty good. Weighs about 1,095 kilograms, that's pretty good as well. Mm. You get all the basic usual safety kits like ESP, you know, traction control, ABS, but it only has two airbags, which I must admit, for a car this small and a car that goes this slow and that car that's supposed to be in a jungle, two airbags is fine. But the only features that this car has is a touchscreen infotainment system with CarPlay and Bluetooth. And I guess Suzuki had to say that at least it's got a leather-wrapped steering wheel. I mean, it's no frills. It's a super old-school SUV, and there's so much to love. But you know, when you get one, lots of people are going to be saying, so you bought it for 170,000 ringgit.
Yes. Mm. And then you're going to say, yeah, I got lots of money. What about you?
Well,
I think that's it, right?
Mm.
So anyway, very quickly, it's basically, it's almost like a thanks but no thanks, right?
Yeah.
All right, just checking.
But remember this, guys. The first batch sold out. Next batch sold out. Third batch coming in probably will be sold out by the time this show goes across the nation, you know?
Mm. Yeah, I feel like despite all I've said, Daniel's going to be right and everybody's just going to go out and buy one because it's so cool. The fashion icon is like a Timberland shoe.
Exactly, exactly. It's like Vans shoes, you know? They're canvas, but why do you pay 100 over ringgit for canvas shoe when you can buy Fung Kyong for 30 ringgit?
Because skateboards, bro.
I can skateboard on the Fung Kyong shoes, oh.
But anyway, we've got another interesting car, a new brand that's been launched in Malaysia, right, Daniel?
Correct. Brand new brand, and it comes from a company that has been around for a long time. This is called the GMC Vigus Pro. It's a pickup truck from Angkatan Tan Moto, which is part of the Tan Chong Group.
JMC, by the way, Daniel.
Oh, yes. JMC. Sorry.
JMC stands for Jiangling Motors Company, who are apparently the sixth largest commercial vehicle brand and second best selling brand in the pickup segment in China. So they know a thing or two about making pickup trucks.
Mm.
The car, if you look at it, guys, it kind of resembles in some ways a Ford Ranger.
Mm. Because underneath, it's a Ford Ranger.
Yes. So it's even got Ranger powertrain, Ford 2-liter diesel powertrain with a ZF 8-speed automatic gearbox, BorgWarner 4WD system with an Eaton rear differential, which all just, you know, are things that you put inside a Ford Ranger. I don't expect the price to be that high as a result. So it might be kind of like a budget Ranger.
Well, you know, in the past, vehicles from China that have come in have always been cheaper than the Japanese equivalent or like the Ford equivalent. And the simple reason is because you want to attract people to your brand, it has to be cheaper. If it's the same price, you'll say, I might as well go and buy the established brand with the established network, the established after sales and everything else.
I don't know. I mean, if I wanted a jungle pickup truck to go around the palm oil plantations, of which I don't own any of, I would pick out something that's, you know,
well-known and reliable.
Yeah,
exactly. Because you don't want to break down, you know?
Yeah.
Now,
the fact that it's even using everything Ford doesn't sell for me because, well, in the past, all the other China brand pickup trucks that have come into the country, okay, they all use drivetrains that came from established pickup truck brands like Toyota and Isuzu. Now, till today, do you see them selling well? No. There's an initial burst of sales because why? Some fleet guy will say, okay, I got a good deal. I'm saving 10,000 on a truck. I'm buying 100 trucks. And a lot of times, these trucks are only used for 2-3 years and then they're dumped. They become rotten metal after that because why? They are thoroughly trashed by workers. You know, construction sites, farms, mining areas and all that. So their use-by date is up anyway. But the thing is now, like if you go to Pengerang, you know, oil and gas is huge. You see the number of Ford pickup trucks there. Now, why didn't they buy a China brand, which is much cheaper? Because they needed reliability because you're in the middle of nowhere.
Mm.
You're not in an urban area. And then if you're going to be using this as a workhorse, you want it to work day in, day out for 3 years.
Yep.
Now, I'm not saying this vehicle is not good, but
you want to be doing that without the worry.
Exactly. Because you see, it's not just the gearbox and the drivetrain. It's also the electronics. What if you damage your side view mirror and you can't get spare parts for it?
Yep.
What if your steering rack goes? What if your suspension goes? All this is not from Ford. So you can't really interchange, you know?
Very, very true.
And the thing is, you see, when they send us this press release, which they sent to everybody else, they did not include the price.
Oh.
Why didn't they include the price? They could have said estimated 99,000. They didn't even include that.
And having said that, actually, even if it's estimated 99,000, basic Hilux is 89,000 or something like that, right?
Exactly. Basic Isuzu D-Max to 81,000. Basic Nissan Navara is 79,000.
Do we know how well this is selling over in China?
You never get figures out of China unless they're electric cars. Only electric cars we seem to be getting figures. Everything else you get like percentage, you know, like market share percentage, you know. And the thing is, like now, Mitsubishi's got a new version of the Triton Athlete out.
Yeah,
2.4 Myvec engine, 6-speed Super Select gearbox. These are all things they tried and tested and proven in the country. And they're charging 141,000 with full warranty and backup service.
The reason I asked, Daniel, is because, you know, in China, there's this very big element of pride of, you know, locally produced stuff.
Yes.
But there's also that I'm very proud that I own a Chinese car, for example. But if you offer me a Nissan or a Ford, I'm likely to take it over the locally produced one.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as they like to say they're very proud of their local products, given the choice, they might opt for something, like most people, I would assume.
I'll give you a very simple example. Very simple example. Okay, let's take a new Perdua Myvi, okay? Mm. Made in Malaysia, people love it. You see a lot of young people when they buy a Myvi, or even an old age pensioner like me, when we buy a Myvi, we're so happy. Oh, we got a brand new Myvi made in Malaysia. 60,000 ringgit. Now imagine that's based loosely on a Toyota, right?
Mm.
Now what if the Toyota equivalent came to Malaysia at 62,000? What do you think will happen?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
that's true.
So it's all about price. It's nothing else. All about price.
Mm-mm.
Very good point, that one.
Mm.
We wanted to do a review about that new Triton Athlete today, but we won't be able to fit it into this today. But what did you think of that Triton Athlete, Daniel?
Well, to be honest, it's a dress-up pickup truck. Triton has been around for a few years. They've been doing really well. In Borneo, they're selling like hotcakes. All the construction teams are using it. That whole Pan Borneo Expressway, if you drive along it, which I've done before, you see just Tritons and Tritons and Tritons and Tritons. Now, if someone in a remote location is buying this truck, what does it say?
Leader of the pack.
Yes. Of course, you know, this is a dressed up version. It's called the Athlete. It's a bit more money, but you know, for urban cowboys who want that big muscular vehicle, this is something you should look at. And you know, Mitsubishi reliability is solid. 200,000 kilometer warranty. Who gives that in Malaysia?
Mm. Most cars don't even reach that distance by the time people sell them.
Exactly. Especially rich people like you.
Oh,
wow. Whoa, boom. Shall we move on?
Okay.
Final one. Speaking of big cars and big ruggedy SUVs that you want to take back into your palm oil plantation or some farm in the outback.
Rawr. That kind of car.
That kind of car, yes. This new car is called the INEOS Grenada 4x4. And if you don't know who INEOS are, if you watch F1, on the back of some of the Mercedes-AMG F1 cars, there's the brand INEOS. And these guys make very, very serious off-roaders. And what they've done to this car called the Grenadier 4x4 is basically reimagine the original Defender, and it looks very, very cool.
It also looks very, very expensive.
I mean, the guy behind this is a multi-billionaire. I'm sure Richard knows him. He's maybe related to Richard. He's a billionaire British guy. He couldn't allow the Defender to just be lost, you know, like what happened with Volkswagen and the Beetle. They just let it go. So he said, I'll buy over the patent, I'll buy over the rights, I'll buy over the factory and everything else. And he's reimagining, that's the word he uses, reimagining the original Land Rover Defender. And it's funny because it's being launched around the same time as the current Defender is coming to Malaysia, you know? But to start, they're launching it in UK, South Africa and Australia. Why these three places? Because these are the three countries that have such a big fascination for the original Defender. And these are the countries which they need really good off-road vehicles to go the length and breadth of the country.
Mm.
So this vehicle comes in with a BMW engine. That's the only thing that's, you know, upsetting a lot of people, a BMW engine, because you're asking why not something else? That, well, they have their reasons why. A ZF 8-speed automatic gearbox and a cabin that is feature-filled to compete with any modern car.
I mean, that's the smartest 4x4 interior I've ever seen in a while.
I mean, I like the fact that they've not put flat screens.
And it looks attractive. It actually looks like the cockpit of some kind of plane almost.
Yeah. I'm not sure about you guys, but I think I see a compass in the middle of the dashboard. That's a nice touch.
I think so. We used to have them back in the day, Arif, before your time.
Ah, I see. I thought they were just, you know, mobile phone inventions.
Before the compass was in a mobile phone. So the big issue now is, before the launch, a lot of people are saying, great job for doing all this and bringing back the Defender and all that. But now when it's been launched and the price has been announced, a lot of people are a little bit, come on, la, you know, this price. But you see, they are not a mass manufacturer. So, of course, they can't make it cheap. And there's no point doing this if you're going to be losing money, right?
Mm.
Yep.
So the price in England, base model, from £48,000.
Crikey.
Which is 271,000 ringgit. Now, take that in comparison. The last Defender that was sold, of course, that's 40-something-year-old design, was just under 200,000 ringgit in Malaysia with taxes.
Mm.
And then you got all kinds of other variations to it. So if you really load it up, it goes up to as much as in Malaysia, in Malaysian currency, 350,000 ringgit before taxes. Now, the Australian office is selling it for 84,000 Australian dollars, which is about 254,000, which is around about that same figure. And this is now a problem because the new Defender, when it comes out, is about the same price.
So that poses an interesting question.
Yes. So a lot of people are going to say, should I take this iconic look with a modern interior and a BMW engine with a ZF gearbox? Or should I take a completely new Defender from the Land Rover company and live with this all new design? That is the question.
Interesting.
I will take the new Defender.
Yeah, me too.
Was not expecting that.
The thing is, if I want an original Defender, I'll buy an original Defender.
Yeah.
That's true.
And I'll do it up like what they have on, you know, James Bond, you know, the bad guys are using the Defender.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that look. So maybe I'll do something like that. But if I want something new and modern, I'll buy something new and modern.
There's somebody who's got one equipped like that that hangs around Bangsar Village. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah,
it looks awesome.
I've seen that.
Yes. There's a lot of tuners out there who are playing with old Defenders right now. A lot of them are coming into the country. Recently, there was one that came in. It's from a company in UK called Kahn, K-A-H-N. They sell those for like 400,000-500,000 ringgit.
Wow.
And it's still based on the old Defender. It may have a V8 engine. It may have a luxury interior, but it's still based on an old Defender, which will leak around the doors, will rattle, slightly wake steering, you know? The aircon is hanging below the dashboard. But you see, the thing is, you want that or do you want something totally modern and luxurious with all the terrain response system like what the new Defender has? You got to pay the same amount of money.
Kind of disappointed by this now.
Right, let's wrap up for this segment, gentlemen.
Yes.
Yep.
We'll be back in just a few moments, of course, with our used car review. We've got a Subaru Impreza WRX version 10 hatchback. That's all coming up after these messages here on Cruise Control on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. Of course, we're now heading into our used car buying guide. This week, we're discussing
the Subaru Impreza WRX version 10 hatchback.
Mm.
But first of all, tonight's used car review is powered by Carsome, Southeast Asia's largest integrated car buying and selling platform. Buy and sell cars with complete peace of mind at carsome.my. Make it Carsome today. Anyway, on with the used car review. Daniel, take it away.
Okay, so, you know, I remember about maybe 12, 13 years ago, seeing this car. This is a hatchback Impreza WRX. And the reaction from myself, I mean, I'm not a big Subaru fan. I mean, I wasn't a very big Subaru fan. But, you know, I admire the boxer engine and the all-wheel drive and their rally pedigree. And, you know, how they used to win races over and over next to the Evo cars. But when this hatchback came out, I was like, hey, what happened? Because, you know, we remember Subaru WRXs for being sedans. And we never think back at, you know, the fact that, you know, was this the first hatchback? Yes, first hatchback. And we just left it at that. Now, fast forward to today. And, you know, everyone's talking about JDM cars, Japan domestic market cars, and their valuations, and how, you know, you should get a Japanese car from Japan and all that, and, you know, performance cars and all that. And I was just browsing through all the classifieds, including Carsome, and I was looking at, you know, interesting cars for sale, something to write about this week, because nobody came to me for any advice. Nobody talked to me this week about any advice, which is quite sad. So I happened to look at one of these cars for sale. It was a white color unit. I say, hey, this I've not seen for a long time, even on the road. Have you guys seen this on the Malaysian roads?
No.
Not many on Malaysian roads, but they did come in. And officially, they were launched in Malaysia about 11 years ago by Moto Image, but very limited numbers. And the price was almost 300,000 ringgit. Now, go back 11 years, at 300,000 ringgit, you can buy a lot of good German cars. You know, you can buy Audi, BMW, Mercedes, you know. And this is a Japanese hatchback for 300,000 ringgit. But a lot of people didn't respect it because it wasn't a sedan anymore. They remembered Imprezas as being sedans. So I did a little bit of research. And then I realized that even someone as knowledgeable as me in the world of motoring, who has got immense amount of knowledge, can be a bit of a dodo sometimes. You know what I mean or not?
He's very humble too.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah.
Very,
yeah.
Very, very
yes,
and then yes. I realized that ever since the first Impreza, there was actually a hatchback, but more like a wagon hatchback.
Mm.
And as I dug up more research online, you know, I love online because I'm learning all the time. And I found out that they continued making these wagons, but they never came to Malaysia. Maybe one or two might have come in under Grey Importers, but you don't see them, you don't notice them. And I shared the pictures on DSF. I'm sure you guys have not seen them also, you know?
I've only seen them in Gran Turismo.
Exactly. So, but the sedan version you see on the road, from version 1 right up to version 10, but you don't see the wagon version. So, of course, over the years, they built wagon version. Some of them came in with the WRX version or as a standard 1.6 TS, which they call the commuter version. But they were selling in Malaysia in very small numbers. So when this model came in, bang, everybody turned their back and said, no, Subaru can't do this. We want a wagon. Because at that time, there was no search engine to find information, you know? So, and then, you know, DSF was just in its initial stage, so we couldn't share this wonderful information with people. So when I did more checking on this car came out in so many variants, so many models. Because why? This was basically Subaru's way of saying, we are back, we are bigger, and we are now going to go into a big new global market. Because Subaru WRXs were not doing that well in Europe. They were doing well in US, they were doing well in Australia, and some parts of Asia. But they were not really big in Europe. So a hatchback made a lot of sense because Europeans, even as far back as then, loved hatchbacks. Golf GTI, you know, for one, you know? And then, of course, BMW came out with the 1 Series and, you know, Mercedes had the A-Class. So the hatchback was coming of age. So by having this car there, they had made a big impact because it was also a very fast car. So over the few years that it was in the market, a lot of versions came out. I've listed all of them down. There's a 20th anniversary version. There's a A-line version. You know, there's a 2.5. From a 2-liter, they went to a 2.5 engine. And they also introduced an automatic gearbox version. Because why? In Europe, people wanted an automatic performance car. And then, of course, you know, as time went by, they had a Spec C, which is even a higher spec version. Then, of course, they had a lighter version, by making the car slightly lighter, you get better performance. So there are so many versions of this car. And today, hatchbacks are in, you know, even in Malaysia, people like hatchbacks. Now, here's the surprising thing. If you do a check on the classifieds, you'll find that this car has got a price variation, check this out, from 55,000 ringgit to as high as 120,000 ringgit. It's a big difference. And it's because there's so many versions and also because you got the 2-liter and the 2.5. So the 2.5 came later. So the one that was selling for 120,000 is actually a 2.5, which is a Moto Image local imported car, brand new. The 55,000 is the 2-liter. And you know, these cars come with Recaro seats and a lot of different variations to it. But all of them were actually in quite standard form. You know, Subaru owners tend to spend a lot of money doing aftermarket accessories. But with this car, notice the ones that were on sale, nearly 80-90% of them, which is about maybe 7-8 cars, so but nearly all of them except one, had a lot of accessories put onto it. So it's good to buy a car that hasn't got a lot of accessories put on because that means the car has not been badly abused or been used by a speed demon, you know?
Yes.
So I'm saying this, at 55,000 ringgit, as long as the car is accident-free, still got its original paint, the mileage is reasonable, you got a service record, this is a Subaru that's not to be missed because the earlier version WRXs, I'm talking about the version 4 and the version 5 and the version 6, are selling for 80 to 100,000 ringgit. But this version 10, which is not that old, is selling for just 55,000.
I guess people don't really like this one as much then.
Exactly, because it's a hatchback, you know, and it's the only real known hatchback. So if you're looking for a car and if you got a bit of money and you want a Subaru, think about this because it's not expensive yet. And, you know, the fact that, you know, almost a million people listen to this radio show every Wednesday, the price is going to jump next week.
That's what I was going to ask you. You know, now that, not because we're talking about it, and it's obviously the most popular car show in the country. But do you see the price going up anytime soon?
You heard it here first.
Oh, here we go.
The price will go up. Because you know why? As people start noticing the value of this car, and if you go to YouTube, there is so many videos of this car by owners from Malaysia and also from around the region, also Singapore, Thailand, and everything. And you see their enthusiasm with this car. And then you start realizing, hey, and it's got, if you think about it, look at the pictures that I've put on DSF. This has got a little bit of an evergreen shape.
It's very popular in the UK. I know that. Yeah.
And if you think about it, its nearest competitor is going to be the Golf R. Four-wheel drive, high amount of power and everything else. But the Golf R comes with its own set of after-sales issue and parts issue, you know? This car, no problem.
The reliable old Subaru.
Yes.
Who can survive in the Australian outback for hours on end.
Correct.
not something you would trust the Volkswagen with.
Yes. So I'm saying, you know, think about it. You know, even if you're not really looking for a car like this, just go and have a look at the few that are on sale. I mean, those flat Archers, those big wheels, those big bonnet scoop in front, the rear spoiler. Mm. It is an aggressive looking piece of machine, you know?
Agreed.
So that's it, gentlemen. I'm just saying, you know, just think about the version 10.
Wonderful. Yeah. So you just heard tonight's used car review.
If you're interested in getting a Subaru or any other used cars, don't forget, you can buy your next car from the largest selection of quality used cars from CarSound.my, such as this Subaru that we've just talked about. All CarSound certified cars have passed a strict 175-point inspection, come with a 5-day money-back guarantee, 1-year warranty, and fixed prices with no hidden fees. Buy and sell cars with complete peace of mind at CarSound.my. Make it CarSound today.
You've been listening to Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9, the business station. We'll be back same time, same place next week. If you missed any part of this show, don't forget you can download the podcast wherever you normally get it from. We recommend that you use the BFM app. It's available in the Apple App Store or the Google Play. My name is Rich Bradbury. On behalf of Arif Ruse and Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my, this has been Cruise Control on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.